He does. Then I don't know where it is, do I? I only knew of the one my cunning little niece stole. Aelin refrained from grinding her teeth. Maeve and Erewhon, united. And not a whisper of where Dorian and Manon were with the other two keys. She didn't acknowledge the walls that began pressing in, the cold sweat again sliding down her back. Why did Maeve ally with Erewhon? I was not privy to that discussion. I was dispatched here quickly. A flash of annoyance. But Maeve somehow has influence over Erewhon. What happened to the iron teeth stationed here at the gap? Called northward to Terrasen. They were given orders to join with the Legion already on its way, after routing the army at the border, then at Peranth. Oh gods. It took all her training to think past the roaring in her head. 100,000 soldiers march on Orinth, Vernon said, chuckling. Will that fire of yours be enough to stop them? Aelin put a hand on Goldrin's hilt, her heart thundering. How far are they from the city? Vernon shrugged. They were already within a few days' march when the Iron Teeth Legion left here. Aelin calculated the distance, the terrain, the size of their own army. They were 2 weeks away at best if the weather didn't hinder them. 2 weeks through dense forest and enemy territory. They'd never make it in time. Do Maeve and Erewhon go to join them?
I'd assume so. Not with the initial group for reasons I was not told. But they will go to Orinth and face you there.
Her mouth turned dry. Aelin rose. Vernon frowned at her.
Don't you wish to ask if I know of Erewhon's weaknesses, or any surprises in store for you?
I have everything I need to know. She jerked her chin to Fenris and Gavriel, and the former peeled away from the wall to open the door. The latter, however, began tightening Vernon's chains once more, anchoring him to the chair, binding his hands to the arms.
Aren't you going to unchain me? Vernon demanded. I gave you what you wished.
Aelin took a step into the hall, noting the fury on Lorkin's face. He'd heard every word, including her oath not to let him slaughter Vernon. Aelin threw Vernon a crooked smile over her shoulder.
I said nothing about unchaining you.
Vernon went still. Aelin shrugged. I said none of us would kill you. It's not our fault if you can't get out of those chains, is it? The blood drained from Vernon's face. Aelin said quietly, You chained and locked my friend in a tower for 10 years. Let's see how you enjoy the experience. She let her smile turn vicious. Though once the trainers here are dealt with, I don't think there will be anyone left to feed you or bring you water. Or even hear your screaming. So I doubt you'll make it to 10 years before the end claims you, but 2 days? 3? I can accept that, I think.
Please,
Vernon said, as Gavriel reached for the door handle to seal the man inside.
Marion saved my life, Aelin said, holding the man's gaze. And you gleefully bowed to the man who killed her. Perhaps even told the King of Otterlin where to find us. All of us.
Please, Vernon shrieked. You should have conserved that tankard of ale, was all Aelin said, before she nodded to Gavriel. Vernon began screaming as the door shut, and Aelin turned the key. Silence filled the hall. Aelin met Elide's wide-eyed stare, Lorkin savagely satisfied at her side. It won't be quick this way, Aelin said, extending the key to Elide. The rest of the question hung there. Vernon kept screaming, pleading for them to come back, to unchain him. Elide studied the sealed door, the desperate man behind it.
The Lady of Peranth took the outstretched key, pocketed it.
We should find a better way to seal that room.
Our worst fears have been confirmed, Aelin said to Rowan, leaning over a railing of one of the Northern Fang's balconies, peering to the army gathered on the gap floor. To where their companions now headed, the task of permanently sealing the chamber in which Vernon sat chained completed. Where they should be headed too. But she had paused here, taken a moment. Rowan laid a hand on her shoulder.
We will face them together, Maeve and Erewhon.
And the 100,000 soldiers marching on Orinth?
Together, Fireheart,
was all he said. She found only centuries of training and cool calculation within his face, that unbreakable will. She rested her head against his shoulder, her temple digging into the light armor.
Will we make it? Will there be anything left at all?
He brushed the hair from her face.
We will try. That is the best we can do.
The words of a commander who had walked on and off killing fields for centuries. He joined their hands, and together they gazed at the army below. The shred of salvation it offered. Had she been a fool? To expend those 3 hard-won months of descent into her power on that army, rather than Maeve?
Maeve and Erewhon.
Even if she began now, it wouldn't, could never be the same.
Don't burden yourself with the what-ifs, Rowan said,
reading the words on her face.
I don't know what to do, she said silently.
He kissed the top of her head.
Together.
And as the wind howled through the peaks, Aelin realized that her mate, perhaps, did not have a solution either. Chapter 81.
100,000,
Ren breathed, warming his hands before the roaring fire in the great hall. They had lost 2 of the silent assassins to Morath archers, seeking retaliation for the destruction of the witch towers. But no more than that, mercifully. Still, the evening meal had been somber. No one had really eaten, not when darkness had fallen and the enemy campfires ignited. More than they could count. Adian had lingered here after everyone else had trudged to their own beds. Only Ren had remained. Lysandra escorting a still trembling Evangeline up to their chamber. What the morning would bring, only the gods knew. Perhaps the gods had abandoned them again, now that their only way to return home had been locked up in an iron box, or focused their efforts entirely on Dorian Havilyard. Ren heaved out a long breath.
This is it, isn't it? There's no one left to come to our aid.
It won't be a pretty end,
Adian admitted, leaning against the mantle.
Especially once they get that 3rd tower operational again.
They wouldn't have another chance to surprise Morath now. He jerked his chin at the young lord.
You should get some rest.
And you?
Adian just stared into the flame.
It would have been an honor,
Ren said,
to serve in this court. With you.
Adian shut his eyes, swallowing hard.
It would have been an honor, indeed.
Ren clapped him on the shoulder. Then his departing footsteps scuffed through the hall. Adian remained alone in the guttering firelight for another few minutes before he made his way toward bed and whatever sleep he might find. He'd nearly reached the entrance to the Eastern Tower when he spied her. Lysandra halted, a cup of what seemed to be steaming milk in her hands.
For Evangeline, she said. She can't sleep.
The girl had been shaking all day, had looked like she'd vomit right at the table. Adian only asked,
Can I speak to her?
Lysandra opened her mouth as if she'd say no, and he was willing to let it drop. But she inclined her head. They walked in silence the entire way to the North Tower, then up and up and up. to Rose's old room. Wren must have seen to it once again. The door was cracked open, golden light spilling onto the landing.
I brought you some milk,
Lysandra announced, barely winded from the climb.
And some company,
she added to the girl, as Adian stepped into the cozy room. Despite the years of neglect, Rose's chamber in the royal castle remained unharmed, one of the few rooms to claim such a thing. Evangeline's eyes widened at the sight of him, and Adian offered the girl a smile before he perched on the side of her bed. She took the milk that Lysandra offered as the shifter sat on the other edge of the mattress and sipped once, hands white-knuckled around the cup.
Before my first battle, Adian said to the girl, I spent the entire night in the privy.
Evangeline squeaked.
You?
Adian smirked.
Oh, yes. Quinn, the old captain of the guard, said it was a wonder I had anything left inside me by the time dawn broke.
An old ache filled Adian's chest at the mention of his mentor and friend, the man he'd admired so greatly, who had made his final stand, as Adian would, on the plain beyond this city. Evangeline let out a little laugh.
That's disgusting.
It certainly was,
Adian said, and could have sworn Lysandra was smiling a bit.
So you're already much braver than I ever was.
I threw up earlier,
Evangeline whispered. Adian said in a conspiratorial whisper,
Better than shitting your pants, sweetheart.
Evangeline let out a belly laugh that made her clutch the cup to keep from spilling. Adian grinned and ruffled her red-gold hair.
The battle won't be pretty,
he said as Evangeline sipped her milk.
And you will likely throw up again. But just remember that this fear of yours, it means you have something worth fighting for, something you care so greatly for that losing it is the worst thing you can imagine.
He pointed to the frost-covered windows.
Those bastards out there on the plain? They have none of that.
He laid his hand on hers and squeezed gently.
They have nothing to fight for. And while we might not have their numbers, we do have something worth defending. And because of that, we can overcome our fear. We can fight against them to the very end for our friends, for our family.
He squeezed her hand again at that.
For those we love.
He dared to look up at Lysandra, whose green eyes were lined with silver.
For those we love, we can rise above that fear. Remember that tomorrow. Even if you throw up, even if you spend the whole night in the privy, remember that we have something to fight for, and it will always triumph.
Evangeline nodded.
I will.
Adian ruffled her hair once more and walked to the door, pausing on the threshold. He met Lysandra's stare, her eyes emerald bright.
I lost my family 10 years ago. Tomorrow, I will fight for the new one I've made.
Not only for Terrison and its court and people, but also for the two ladies in this room.
I wanted it to be you in the end.
He almost spoke her words then. Almost said them back to Lysandra as something like sorrow and longing entered her face. But Adian ducked out of the room, shutting the door behind him. Lysandra barely slept. Every time she closed her eyes, she saw the expression on Adian's face, heard his words. He didn't expect to survive this battle. Didn't expect any of them to. She should have gone after him, run down the tower stairs after him. And yet she didn't. Dawn broke, a bright day with it, so they might see the size of the host waiting for them all the more clearly. Lysandra braided Evangeline's hair, the girl more straight-backed than she'd been yesterday. She could thank Adian for that, for the words that had allowed the girl to sleep last night. They walked in silence, Evangeline's chin high, down to the great hall, for what might very well be their last breakfast. They were nearly there when an old voice said,
I would like a word.
Darrow. Evangeline turned before Lysander did. The ancient lord stood in the doorway of what seemed to be a study and beckoned them inside.
It will not take long,
he said upon noting the displeasure still on Lysandra's face. She was done making herself appear nice for men whom she had no interest in being nice to. Evangeline peered at her in silent question, but Lysandra jerked her chin toward the old man.
Very well.
The study was crammed with stacks of books, piles and piles against the walls, along the floors. Well over 1,000, many half-crumbling with age.
The last of the sacred texts from the Library of Orinth,
Darrow said, aiming toward the desk piled with papers before a narrow glass window.
All that the master scholars managed to save 10 years ago.
So few. So few compared to what Aelin had said once existed in that near-mythic library.
I had them brought out of hiding after the king's demise,
Darrow said, seating himself behind the desk.
A fool's optimism, I suppose.
Lysandra strode to one of the piles, peering at a title, in a language she did not recognize.
The remains of a once great civilization,
Darrow said thickly. And it was the slight catch in his voice that made Lysandra turn. She opened her mouth to demand what he wanted, but glimpsed what sat beside his right hand. Encased in crystal no larger than a playing card, the red and orange flower within seemed to glow, just like the power of its namesake.
The king's flame,
she breathed, unable to stop herself as she approached. Aelin and Adian had told her of the legendary flower, which had bloomed across the mountains and fields the day Brannan had set foot on this continent, proof of the peace he brought with him. And since those ancient days, only single blossoms had been spotted, so rare that their appearance was deemed a sign that the land had blessed whatever ruler sat on Terrasen's throne, that the kingdom was truly at peace. The one entombed in crystal on Darrow's desk, Aelin had said, had appeared during Orlon's reign. Orlon, Darrow's lifelong love.
The master scholars grabbed the books when Otterlin invaded,
Darrow said, smiling sadly at the king's flame.
I grabbed this.
The antler throne, the crown, all of it destroyed. Save for this one treasure, as great as any belonging to the Galathinius household.
It's very beautiful,
Evangeline said, coming up to the desk.
But very small.
Lysandra could have sworn the old man's lips twitched toward a smile.
It is indeed,
Darrow said.
And so are you.
She didn't expect the softening of his voice, the kindness, and didn't expect his next words either.
Battle will be upon us before midday,
Darrow said to Evangeline.
I find that I will have need for someone of quick wit and quicker feet to assist me here, to run messages to our commanders in this castle, and fetch me supplies as needed.
Evangeline angled her head.
You wish me to help?
You have trained with warriors during your travels with them, I take it.
Evangeline glanced up at Lysandra in question, and she nodded to her ward. They had all overseen Evangeline learning the basics of swordplay and archery while on the road. The girl nodded to the old lord.
I have some ability, but not like Adian.
Few do, Darrow said wryly. But I shall need someone with a fearless heart and steady hand to help me. Are you that person?
Evangeline didn't look up to Lysandra again.
I am, she said, chin lifting.
Darrow smiled slightly.
Then head down to the Great Hall, eat your breakfast, and when you return here, there shall be armor waiting for you.
Evangeline's eyes widened at the mention of armor, no trace of fear dimming them at all. Lysandra murmured to her, "Go. I'll be down with you in a minute." Evangeline dashed out, braid flying behind her. Only when Lysandra was certain she had gone downstairs did she say, "Why?"
"I assume that question means you are allowing me to commandeer your ward."
"Why?" Darrow picked up the Kingsflame crystal.
"Nox Owen is of no use to me, now that his allegiance has been made clear, and apparently has vanished to the gods nowhere, likely at Adian's request."
He turned the crystal over in his thin fingers.
"But beyond that, no child should have to watch as her friends are cut down. Keeping her busy, giving her a purpose and some small power, will be better than locking her in the North Tower, scared out of her wits at every horrible sound and death."
Lysandra did not smile, did not bow her head. "You would do this for the ward of a whore." Darrow set down the crystal.
"It's the faces of the children that I remember the most from 10 years ago. Even more than Orland's. And Evangeline's face yesterday as she looked out at that army. It was the same despair I saw back then. So you may think me a champion bastard, as Adian would say, but I am not so heartless as you might believe."
He nodded toward the open doorway.
"I will keep an eye on her."
She wasn't entirely certain what to say. If she should spit in his face and tell him to hell with his offer. Yet the brightness in Evangeline's eyes, the way she'd run out of here. Purpose. Darrow had offered her purpose and guidance. So she turned from the room, from the precious trove, the ancient books worth more than gold. Darrow's silent, mournful companions. "Thank you." Darrow waved her off and went back to studying whatever papers were on his desk, though his eyes did not move along the pages. The battlement walls of the city were lined with soldiers, each stone faced at what marched closer. The witch tower was still down, thank the gods. But even from the distance, Adian could spy soldiers toiling to repair its damaged wheel. Yet without another wyvern to replace the one felled yesterday, it would not be moving soon. It wouldn't make today any easier, though. No, today would hurt.
"They'll be within the archer's range in about an hour,"
Elgin reported. Darrow's orders be damned. Killian was still general, yes, but every report his friend received, Adian got as well.
"Remind them to make their shots count. Pick targets."
The Bane knew that without being told. The others? They had proved their mettle in these battles, but a reminder never hurt. Elgin aimed for the sections of the city walls that Renan the Fey nobles had deemed the best advantage for their archers. Against 100,000 troops, they might only stand to thin the lines, but to let the enemy charge unchallenged at the walls would be utter folly, and break the spirit of these people before they met their end.
"What is that?"
Ren murmured, pointing to the horizon. "Sharp." Ren's eyes had to be sharper than most humans, since it was still just a smudge on the horizon to Adian. A breath passed. The dark smudge began to take form, rising into the blue sky, flying toward them.
"Ilkin?"
Ren squinted, as he shielded his eyes against the glare.
"Too big,"
Adian breathed. Closer. The mass flying above the teeming army became clearer. Larger.
"Wyverns,"
Adian said, dread curdling in his stomach. The Iron Teeth Aerial Legion had been unleashed at last.
"Oh gods,"
Ren whispered. Against a terrestrial siege, Orinth might have held out, a few days or weeks, but they could have lasted. But with the 1,000 or so Iron Teeth witches who soared toward them on those wyverns, they would not need their infernal towers to destroy this city. The castle. to rip open the city gates and walls and let in more ass hordes. The soldiers began to spot the wyverns. People cried out, along the battlements, up in the castle looming behind them. This siege would not even get the chance to be a siege. It would end today, within a few hours. Racing feet skidded to a halt, and then Lysandra was there, panting. "Tell me what to do, where to go." Her emerald eyes were wide with terror, helpless terror and despair. "I can change into a wyvern, try to keep them."
"There are over 1,000 iron teeth," Adian said, his voice hollow in his ears.
Her fear whetted something sharp and dangerous in him, but he refrained from reaching for her.
"There is nothing you or we can do."
A few dozen of the iron teeth had sacked Rifthold in a matter of hours. "This host."
Adian focused on his breathing, on keeping his head high as soldiers began to step away from their positions along the walls.
"Unacceptable."
"Stay where you are," he bellowed. "Hold the line, and do not balk."
The roared command halted those who'd looked prone to bolt, at least. But it didn't stop the shaking swords, the stench of their rising fear. Adian turned to Lysandra and Wren.
"Get Rolf's fire lances up on the higher towers and buildings. See if they can burn the iron teeth from the sky."
When Wren hesitated, Adian snarled,
"Do it now."
Then Wren was racing toward where the pirate lord stood with his Mycenaean soldiers.
"It won't do anything, will it?"
Lysandra said softly.
Adian just said, "Take Evangeline and go. There is a small tunnel in the bottom level of the castle that leads into the mountains. Take her and go."
She shook her head.
"To what end? Morath will find us all anyway."
His commanders were sprinting toward him, and for the first time since he'd known them, there was true dread shining in the eyes of the Bane, in Elgin's eyes. But Adian kept his attention fixed on Lysandra.
"Please, I am begging you, Lysandra, to go."
Her chin lifted.
"You are not asking our other allies to run."
"Because I am not in love with our other allies."
For a heartbeat, she blinked at him. Then her face crumpled, and Adian only stared at her, unafraid of the words he'd spoken, only afraid of the dark mass that swept toward them. Staying within formation above that endless army, afraid of what that legion would do to her, to Evangeline.
"I should have told you,"
Adian said, voice breaking.
"Every day after I realized it all these months, I should have told you every day."
Lysandra began to cry, and he brushed away her tears. His commanders reached him, ashen and panting.
"Orders, General?"
He didn't bother to tell them that he wasn't their general. It wouldn't matter what the hell he was called in a few hours anyway. Yet Lysandra remained at his side, made no move to run.
"Please,"
he said to her. Lysandra only linked her fingers through his in silent answer and challenge. His heart cracked at that refusal, at the hand, shaking and cold, that clung to his. He squeezed her fingers tightly, and did not let go as he faced his commanders.
Wyverns
from the north!
The screamed warning shattered down the battlements, and Adian and Lysandra ducked as they whirled toward the attack coming at their backs. 13 wyverns raced from the staghorns, plunging toward the city walls. And as they shot toward Orinth, people and soldiers screaming and fleeing before them. The sun hit the smaller wyvern leading the attack, lighting up wings like living silver. Adian knew that wyvern, knew the white-haired rider atop it.
"Hold fire!"
he bellowed down the lines. His commanders echoed the order, and all the arrows that had been pointed upward now halted.
"It's..."
Lysandra breathed, her hand dropping from his while she walked forward a step, as if in a daze.
"It..."
Soldiers still fell back from the city walls as Manon Blackbeak and her 13 landed along them, right before Adian and Lysandra.
It was not the witch he had last seen on a beach in Eelway. No. There was nothing of that cold, strange creature in the face that smiled grimly at him. Nothing of her in that remarkable crown of stars atop her brow. A crown of stars? For the last Kraken queen. Panting, rasping breath sneered, and Adian glanced away from Manon Blackbeak to see Darrow hurry onto the city walls, gaping at the witch and her wyvern, at Adian for not firing at her. Her, whom Darrow believed to be an enemy come to parley before their slaughter.
We will not surrender, Darrow spat.
Asterin Blackbeak, her blue wyvern beside Manon's, let out a low laugh. Indeed, Manon's lips curved in cool amusement as she said to Darrow,
We have come to ensure that you don't, mortal.
Darrow hissed,
Then why has your master sent you to speak with us?
Asterin laughed again.
We have no master,
Manon Blackbeak said. And it was indeed a queen's voice that she spoke with, her golden eyes bright.
We come to honor a friend.
There was no sign of Dorian amongst the 13. But Adian was reeling enough that he didn't have the words to ask.
We came, Manon said, loud enough that all on the city walls could hear. To honor a promise made to Aelin Galathinius. To fight for what she promised us.
Darrow said quietly,
And what was that?
Manon smiled then.
A better world.
Darrow took a step back, as if disbelieving what stood before him, in defiance of the legion that swept toward their city. Manon only looked to Adian, that smile lingering.
Long ago, the Krakens fought beside Terrasen to honor the great debt we owed the Fey King Brannan for granting us a homeland. For centuries, we were your closest allies and friends.
That crown of stars blazed bright upon her head.
We heard your call for aid.
Lysandra began weeping.
And we have come to answer it.
How many?
Adian breathed, scanning the skies, the mountains.
How many?
Pride and awe filled the Witch Queen's face, and even her golden eyes were lined with silver as she pointed toward the staghorns.
See for yourself.
And then, breaking from between the peaks, they appeared. Red cloaks flowing on the wind, they filled the northern skies. So many he could not count them, nor the swords and bows and weapons they bore upon their backs, their brooms flying straight and unwavering. Thousands, thousands of them descended upon Orinth. Thousands of them now swept over the city, his soldiers gaping upward at the stream of fluttering red, undaunted and untroubled by the enemy force darkening the horizon. One by one by one, they alit upon the empty castle battlements. An aerial legion to challenge the Iron Teeth. The Krakens had returned at last.
Chapter 82.
Every Kraken who could fly and wield a sword had come. For days they had raced northward, keeping deep to the mountains, then cutting low over Oakwald before making a wide circuit to avoid Morath's detection. Indeed, as Manon and the 13 perched on the city walls, the Krakens streaming overhead while they made their way to whatever landing place they might find on the castle battlements, it was still hard to believe they had made it, and without an hour to spare. The farther north they had flown, the more Krakens had fallen into the lines, as if the crown of stars Manon wore was a lodestone, summoning them to her. Every mile, more appeared from the clouds, the mountains, the forest. Young and old, wise-eyed or fresh-faced, they came. Until 5,000 trailed behind Manon and the 13.
They've completely stopped, breathed the shapeshifter beside Adian, pointing toward the battlefield.
Far out, Morath's host had halted. Utterly halted, as if in doubt and shock.
Your grandmother is with them,
Asterin murmured to Manon.
I can feel it.
I know.
Manon turned to the young general prince.
We shall handle the Iron Teeth.
His turquoise eyes were bright as the day above them, as he gestured to the plain.
By all means, go right ahead.
Manon's mouth quirked to the side. Then she jerked her chin to the 13.
We shall be on your castle's battlements. I leave one of my sentinels here with you, should you need to send word.
A nod to Vesta, and the red-haired witch made no move to fly as the others peeled off toward the great towering palace. Manon had never seen its like. Even the former glass castle in Rifthold had been nothing compared to it. Manon smiled at the old man who had hissed at her, showing all her teeth.
You're welcome, she said,
and with a snap of the reins, was airborne. Morath had halted completely, as if reassessing their strategy now that the Krokins had appeared from the mists of legend. Not hunted nearly as close to extinction as they'd believed, it seemed. It left Manon and the army she'd raised the chance to catch their breath, at least. And a night to sleep, if fitfully. She'd met with the mortal leaders during dinner, when it became apparent that Morath would not be finishing them off today. 5,000 Krokins would not win this war. They would not stop 100,000 soldiers. But they could keep the Iron Teeth legions at bay, keep them from sacking the city and letting in the demon hordes. Long enough for whatever small miracle, Manon didn't know. She hadn't dared to ask, and none of the mortals had posed the question either. Could the city outlast 100,000 soldiers hammering its walls and gates? Perhaps. But not with the Witch Tower still operational on the plain. She had little doubt that it was currently being repaired, a new wyvern being hitched up. Perhaps that was why they had halted. To give themselves time to get that tower up again, and blast the Krokins into oblivion. Only the dawn would reveal what the Iron Teeth chose to do, what they'd accomplished. Manon and the 13, Bronwyn and Glennis with them, spent hours organizing the Krokins, assigning them to certain flanks of the Iron Teeth based on Manon's knowledge of their enemy's formations. She'd created those formations, had planned to lead them. And when that was done, when the meeting with the mortal rulers was over, all of them still grim-faced but not quite so near panic, Manon and the 13 found a chamber in which to sleep. A few candles burned in the spacious room, but no furniture filled it. Nothing save the bedrolls they brought in. Manon tried not to look too long at hers, to mark the scent that had faded with every mile northward. Where Dorian was, what he was doing, she didn't let herself think about. If only because doing so would send her flying southward again, all the way to Morath. In the dim room, Manon sat on her bedroll, the 13 seated around her, and listened to the chaos of the castle. The place was little more than a tomb, the ghosts of its riches haunting every corner. She wondered what this room had once been. A meeting room, a place to sleep, a study. There were no indicators. Manon leaned her head back against the cold stones of the wall behind her, her crown discarded by her boots. Asterin spoke first, cutting through the silence of the coven.
We know their every move, every weapon. And now the Krokins do, too. The matrons are likely in a panic.
She'd never seen her grandmother in a panic, but Manon huffed a dark laugh.
We shall see tomorrow, I suppose.
She surveyed her 13.
You have come with me this far, but tomorrow it will be your own kind that we face. You may be fighting friends or lovers or family members.
She swallowed.
I will not blame you if you cannot do it.
We have come this far, Sorrel said, because we are all prepared for what tomorrow will bring.
Indeed, the 13 nodded. Asterin said, we are not afraid.
No, they were not.
Looking at the clear eyes around her, Manon could see that for herself.
I'd expected at least some, Vesta groused, from the Farian Gap to join us.
They don't understand,
Ghislaine said,
what we even offered them.
Freedom. Freedom from the matrons who had forged them into tools of destruction.
A waste, Asterin grumbled. Even the green-eyed demon twins nodded.
Silence fell again. Despite their clear eyes, her 13 were well aware of the limitations of 5,000 Krakens against the Iron Teeth and the army beneath it. So Manon said, looking them each in the eye,
I would rather fly with you than 10,000 Iron Teeth at my side.
She smiled slightly.
Tomorrow, we will show them why.
Her coven grinned, wicked and defiant, and touched two fingers to their brows in deference. Manon returned the gesture, bowing her head as she did.
We are the 13, she said, from now until the darkness claims us.
Evangeline had decided that she no longer wished to be page to Lord Darrow, but rather a Krakken witch. One of the women even went so far as to give the wide-eyed girl an extra red cloak, which Evangeline was still wearing when Lysandra tucked her into bed. She'd help Darrow tomorrow, Evangeline promised as she nodded off, after she made sure the Krakens had all the help they needed. Lysandra had smiled at that, despite the odds still stacked so high against them. Manon Blackbeak, now Manon Krakken, she supposed, had been blunt in her assessment. The Krakens could keep the Iron Teeth at bay, perhaps defeat them if they were truly lucky. But the hosts of Morath were still there to contend with. Once the army marched again, their plans to defend the walls would remain the same. Unable and unwilling to fall asleep on the cot beside Evangeline's bed, Lysandra found herself wandering the halls of the rambling ancient castle. What a home it would have made for her and Evangeline. What a court. Perhaps she'd unconsciously followed his scent. But Lysandra wasn't at all surprised when she entered the great hall and found Adian before the dying fire. He stood alone, and she had little doubt he'd been that way for a while now. He turned before she'd barely made it through the doorway, watched her every step.
Because I am not in love with our other allies.
How the words changed everything and yet nothing.
You should be asleep.
Adian gave her a half smile.
So should you.
Silence fell between them as they stared at each other. She could have spent all night like that. Had spent many nights like that in another beast's skin. Just watching him, taking in the powerful lines of his body, the unbreakable will in his eyes.
I thought we were going to die today, she said.
We were.
I'm still angry with you, she blurted. But...
His brows rose, light she had not seen for some time shining from his face.
But...
She scowled.
But I shall think about what you said to me. That's all.
A familiar wicked grin graced his lips.
You'll think about it.
Lysandra lifted her chin, looking down her nose at him as much as she could while he towered over her.
Yes, I will think about it. What I plan to do.
About the fact that I am in love with you?
Ugh.
He knew that the swaggering arrogance would knock her off kilter.
If that's what you want to call it.
Is there something else I'm supposed to call it?
He took a single step toward her, letting her decide if she'd allow it. She did.
Just...
Lysandra pressed her lips together.
Don't die tomorrow. That's all I ask.
So you can have time to think about what you plan to do with my declaration.
Precisely.
Adian's grin turned predatory.
May I ask something of you, then?
I don't think you're in a position to make requests, but fine.
That wolfish grin remained as he whispered in her ear.
If I don't die tomorrow, may I kiss you when the day is done?
Lysandra's face heated as she pulled back, yielding a step. She was a trained courtesan, gods above, highly trained. And yet the simple request reduced her knees to wobbling. She mastered herself, squaring her shoulders.
If you don't die tomorrow, Adian, then we'll talk and see what comes of it.
Adian's wolfish grin didn't so much as falter.
Until tomorrow night, then.
Hell waited for them tomorrow. Perhaps their doom. But she wouldn't kiss him. Not now. Wouldn't give that sort of promise or farewell. So Lysandra walked from the hall, heart racing.
Until tomorrow.
Chapter 83. Dorian flew and flew. Along the spine of the fangs, Oakwald a winter bear sprawled to his right. He soared northward for nearly 2 days before he dared to stop. Picking a clearing amid a tangle of ancient trees, he crashed through the branches, hardly registering the sting through his thick wyvern's hide. He shifted as soon as he hit the snow, his magic instantly thawing the frozen stream wending through the space. Then he fell to his knees and drank. Deep, panting gulps of water. Finding food was an easier endeavor than he'd anticipated. He had no need of a snare or arrows to catch the lean rabbit that cowered nearby. No need of knives to skin it, or a spit. When his thirst and hunger had been sated, when a glance at the sky told him no enemy approached, Dorian drew the marks. Just one more time. He had to be on his way soon. But for this, he could delay his flight northward a little while longer. Damaris, it seemed, also agreed. It summoned who he wished this time. Gavin appeared in the circle of bloody word marks, paler and murkier in the morning light.
You found it, then, the ancient king said by way of greeting, and left Erewhon with one hell of a mess to clean up.
I did.
Dorian put a hand to his jacket pocket. To the terrible power thrumming there. It had taken every ounce of his concentration during his mad flight from Morath to block out its whispering. His shiver was not from the frigid air alone.
Then why summon me?
Dorian met the man's gaze, king to king.
I wanted to tell you that I attained it, so you might have a chance to say goodbye. To Elena, I mean. Before the lock is forged.
Gavin stilled. Dorian didn't shy from the king's assessing stare. After a moment, Gavin said a shade softly.
Then, I suppose I will also be saying farewell to you.
Dorian nodded. He was ready. Had no other choice but to be ready. Gavin asked,
Have you decided on it, then? That you will be the one sacrificed? Aelin is in the north, Dorian said. When I find her, I suppose we'll decide what to do.
Who would be the one who joined the Three Keys and did not walk away from it?
But, he admitted, I am hoping she might have come up with another solution. One for Elena, too.
Aelin had escaped Maeve. Perhaps she'd be as lucky in finding a way to escape their fate. A phantom wind blew the strands of Gavin's long hair across his face.
Thank you, he said hoarsely, for even considering it.
But grief shone in the king's eyes. He knew precisely how impossible it would be. So Dorian said,
I'm sorry for what success with the lock will mean for both of you.
Gavin's throat bobbed.
My mate made her choice long ago. She was always prepared to face the consequences, even if I was not.
Just as Sorsha had made her own choices, followed her own path. And for once, the memory of her did not ache. Rather, it gleamed, a shining challenge,
to make it count, for her and so many others, for himself too.
Do not give up on life so easily, Gavin said. It is the life I had with Elena that allows me to even consider parting from her now. A good life. As good as any that could be hoped for.
He inclined his head.
I wish the same for you.
Before Dorian could voice what surged in his heart at the words, Gavin glanced skyward. His dark brows narrowed.
You need to go.
For the booming of wings filled the air. Thousands of wings. The Iron Teeth Legion at Morath had still rallied after the keep's collapse, it seemed, and now made its long flight northward to Orinth, likely infinitely more eager to tear into his friends. He prayed Maeve was not in that host, that she remained licking her wounds in Morath with Erewhon, until the rest of their horrors marched, the spider princesses with them. But despite the approaching army, Dorian touched Damaris's hilt and said,
I will take care of it, of Otterlin, for whatever time I have left. I will not abandon it.
The sword glowed warm. And Gavin, despite the loss that loomed for him, smiled slightly, as if he felt the warmth of the sword too.
I know, he said. I have always known that.
Damaris's warmth held steady. Dorian swallowed against the tightness in his throat.
When the word gate is sealed, will I be able to open this sort of portal again? Will I be able to see you, seek your counsel?
Gavin faded.
I don't know.
He added quietly,
but I hope so.
Dorian put a hand over his heart and bowed deeply. And as Gavin disappeared into the snow and sun, Dorian could have sworn the king bowed back. Minutes later, when wings blotted out the sun, no one noticed the lone wyvern that rose from Oakwald and fell into line with the teeming host. Chapter 84. There was no armor left in the castle's depleted arsenal. And none would have fit wyverns anyway. What had survived Otterlin's occupation or been acquired since its fall had been distributed. And though Prince Adian had offered to have a blacksmith weld sheets of metal to form breastplates, Manon had taken one look at the repurposed doors they'd use and known they would be too heavy. Against the Iron Teeth Legion, speed and agility would be their greatest allies. So they would head into battle as they always had. With nothing but their blades, their iron teeth and nails, and their cunning. Standing on a large balcony atop the uppermost tower of the castle of Orinth, Morath's army spread far below. Manon watched the rising sun and knew it could very well be her last. But the 13, many of them leaning against the balcony rail, did not look eastward. No, their attention was on the enemy. Stirring in the rising light, or on the two Krakens who stood with Manon, brooms in hand and swords already strapped across their backs. It had not been a shock to see Bronwyn arrive this morning dressed for battle, but Manon had paused when Glennis emerged with a sword, hair braided back. They had already gone over the details, and had done so thrice last night. And now, in the light of the breaking day, they lingered atop the ancient tower. Far out, deep in Morath's teeming ranks, a horn rang out. Slowly, a great beast awakening from a deep sleep, Morath's host began to move.
It's about time,
Asterin muttered beside Manon, her braided hair bound with a strip of leather across her brow. Iron Teeth wyverns became airborne, lumbering against the weight of their armor. It wouldn't win the day, though. No. The Iron Teeth, after a heavy start, soon filled the skies, 1,000 at least. Where the Farian Gap host was, Manon didn't want to know. Not yet. On the towers of the castle, on the roofs of the city and along the battlement walls, the Kraken army straightened their brooms at their sides, ready for the signal to fly. A signal from Bronwyn, from the carved horn at her side. The horn was cracked and browned with age, the symbols carved into it so worn they were barely visible. Noting Manon's stare, Bronwyn said, "A relic from the Old Kingdom. It belonged to Telyn Venora, a young, untried warrior during the last days of the war, who was near the gates when Rhiannon fell. My ancestor." She ran a hand over the horn. "She blew this horn to warn our people that Rhiannon had been killed, and to flee the city. Just after she got out the warning call, the Blue Blood Matron slaughtered her. But it gave our people enough time to run, to survive." Silver lined Bronwyn's dark eyes. "It is my honor to blow this horn again today. Not to warn our people, but to rally them." None of the 13 looked Bronwyn's way, but Manon knew they heard each word. Bronwyn put a hand on her leather breastplate. "Telyn is here today. In the hearts of every Kraken who got out, who made it this far. All of them who fell in the Witch Wars are with us, even if we cannot see them." Manon thought of those two presences she'd felt while fighting the matrons, and knew Bronwyn's words to be true. "It is for them that we fight," Bronwyn said, her stare falling to the approaching army. "And for the future we stand to gain." "A future we all stand to gain," Manon said, and met the eyes of the 13. Though they did not smile, the fierceness in their faces spoke enough. Manon turned to Glennis. "You truly intend to fight?" Glennis nodded, firm and unyielding. 500 years ago, my mother chose the future of the royal bloodline over fighting beside her loved ones. And though she never regretted her choice, the weight of what she left behind wore on her. I have carried her burden my entire life." The crone gestured to Bronwyn, then to Asterin. "All of us who fight here today, do so with someone standing invisible behind us." Asterin's gold-flecked black eyes softened a bit.
"Yes,"
was all Manon's second said, as her hand drifted to her abdomen. Not in memory of the hateful word branded there, of what had been done to her. In memory of the stillborn witchling who had been thrown by Manon's grandmother into the fire before Asterin had a chance to hold her. In memory of the hunter whom Asterin had loved, as no Iron Teeth ever had loved a man, and had never gone back to, for shame and fear. The hunter who had never stopped waiting for her to return, even when he was an old man. For them, for the family she had lost, Manon knew her second would fight today, so it might never happen again. Manon would fight today to make sure it never did too.
"So we come to it after 500 years, said Glennis, her voice unwavering yet distant, as if pulled into the depths of memory.
The rising sun bathed the white walls of Orinth in gold.
"The final stand of the Krokens."
As if the words themselves were a signal, Bronwyn lifted the horn of Telyn Venora to her lips and blew. Most believed the Florine River flowed down from the Staghorns, right past the western edge of Orinth before cutting across the lowlands. But most didn't know that the ancient Fey King had built his city wisely, digging sewers and subterranean streams that carried the fresh mountain water directly into the city itself, all the way beneath the castle. A torch lifted high. Lysandra peered into one of those underground waterways, the dark water eddying as it flowed through the stone tunnel and out the city walls. Her breath curled in front of her, as she said to the group of Bane soldiers who'd accompanied her,
"Lock the grate once I'm out."
A grunt was her only confirmation. Lysandra frowned at the heavy iron grate across the subterranean river, the metal bands as thick as her forearm. It had been Lord Murtaugh who'd suggested this particular route of attack. His knowledge of the waterways beneath the city and castle beyond even Adian's awareness. Lysandra braced herself for the plunge, knowing the water would be cold, beyond cold. But Morath was moving, and if she did not get into position soon, she might very well be too late.
"Gods be with you,"
one of the Bane soldiers said. Lysandra gave the man a tight smile.
"And with you all."
She didn't let herself reconsider. She just walked right off the stone ledge. The plunge was swift, bottomless. The cold ripped the air from her lungs, but she was already shifting, light and heat filling her body as her bones warped, as skin vanished. Her magic pulsed, draining quickly at the expenditure making this body required. But then it was done. Distantly, above the surface, the Bane swore. Whether in fear or awe, she didn't care. Surfacing enough to gulp down a breath, Lysandra submerged again. Even in this form, the cold tore at her, the water murky and dim. But she swam with the current, letting it guide her on its way out of the ancient tunnel. Beneath the city walls, into the wider fluorine, where the cold grew nearly unbearable. Thick blocks of ice drifted overhead, veiling her from enemy eyes. She swam down the river, right along the eastern flank of Morath's host, and waited for her signal. The Krokins took to the skies, a wave of red that swept over the city and its walls. Atop the southern section of the wall, Ren at his side, Adian tipped his head back as he watched them soar into the air above the plain.
"You really think they can fight against that?"
Ren nodded toward the oncoming sea of Iron Teeth witches and wyverns.
"I think we don't have any other choice but to hope they can," Adian said,
unslinging his bow from across his back. Ren did the same. At the silent signal, archers down the city walls took up their bows. Scattered amongst them,